Hi guys, welcome to the Accounting Tech Tar Pit, presented by Early Adopters Hub, the accelerator for accounting tech. I'm your host, Jack Teal, and this is a podcast for accounting tech startup founders focused on no BS, candid conversations about the challenges and benefits of building a startup in the accounting industry. Welcome back, listeners. Johan and I have really been enjoying this season's conversations and are looking forward to hopefully another great one today. We're joined by a fantastic accounting tech founder, Melissa Voss of FuseWorks. Great to have you here, Melissa.
Thank you. Great to be here.
Thanks for joining us and taking some time out of your day. I know how busy you are, and I know it's a busy time of year as well for accountants and for accounting tech startups. Obviously keen to understand the journey that you've been on with FuseWorks, but first and foremost, for anyone who's listening who doesn't know you, I'll just provide a very short snippet of your CV. So firstly, like many accounting tech founders, you are a chartered accountant yourself. But unlike many accountants that I know, you haven't jumped between firms very much. I see that you've been loyal, extremely loyal to O'Connell's for 28 years. So congratulations on that. And you're obviously still there. You have a role to play within the firm even today. But primarily right now, you're the co-founder of FuseWorks, which is obviously a great accounting tech success story, which includes three different products: FuseDocs, FuseSign, and FuseCharts. And potentially, I wonder, are there more on the horizon in future? But in terms of today, keen to delve a little bit deeper into the startup side and how it all came about. But firstly, have I missed anything? Anything else you want to add to kind of your background, your journey to get here?
I think you've summarized it quite nicely, although, you know, 28 years does make me sound very old, but that's okay. That's okay. That means I've got some really good experience to share, right?
It does. I mean, a lot of successful startups are actually founded by people post, 45. And I think there's kind of a misconception that it's all about, you know, uni students who come out and change the world. And the reality is actually domain expertise and experience and having seen a few things and been around the traps for a while does make a difference and increase your chance of success. So maybe as a starting point, we can go right back to the beginning of FuseWorks and the pain point that you guys felt yourselves. So, you know, a lot of founders to be begin with that personal pain, but don't really validate that with other people. You mentioned in some of the prep that we did that you realized you weren't alone in your frustrations. What does that mean? And kind of how did you come to that realization that you weren't alone?
Yes, I guess this stems right back to the role I played with O'Connell's and the relationships I had with others in the industry. So being a chartered accountant, I was very heavily involved in the world of chartered accounting and was on the public practice panel. I was involved with lots of user groups with other tech for accountants around how things could be done differently. And I guess in terms of not being alone, when we came up with a concept or an idea to fill a gap in our practice, we could validate that quite easily with connections. So, yes, I've been in accounting for a long time, know lots of people, knew lots of firms in Brisbane, and we could validate pretty quickly, I guess, how we were solving the problems. And they were all like, oh, we want in. When can we get that? So we knew what we had solved would actually, I guess, apply to other firms, not just us. And that was, I guess, the start of, oh, maybe we're onto something here. Maybe this has got wider application. And should we take the leap?
And so once the penny dropped that other people might have this pain as well, was it a matter of let's go all in, let's move fast, let's drop everything and do this? How did you guys take that next step?
Yeah, so if I probably give some context to that, the first thing we were grappling with was document collation. So a very repetitive process in an accounting firm where you're compiling a set of documents to go out to a client monthly, quarterly, annually. And that saw a document collation process come to life in Excel at the time, and it pretty much had some fancy macros that did some things. That was the birth of FuseDocs. So we did start, I guess, very carefully and mindfully in terms of the types of clients that we rolled it out into their practices. So we picked a couple and worked with them to go, does this have application? How would it fit, you know, the tech you're using in your practice? And would it solve a problem? And yes, it did. But it was a very tailored, hand-holding approach to rolling out a process automation, really, with some tech to support that. So I guess to answer that question, it did, like, we knew the gaps. We put it in place in a structured way. And from there, it was like, well, we've got a few clients that are willing to pay for this. Oh, maybe we need to invest in this a little bit more. But back then, it was my business partner, Scott Barber, and I, who had the tech brain, so the software engineering brain and the accounting brain, and we sort of came together and went, there's opportunity here for this to actually be a full-fledged product, and how far do we want to take it? And we slowly and surely sort of turned it from just us to, you know, hundreds of clients now across Australia and New Zealand.
If you were to put yourself back in your shoes then, knowing what you know now about this journey and the challenges and whatever else, is there anything you would do differently? Or I suppose, what would be the number one thing that you would do differently?
We started, I guess, with very low resources. It was the two of us, you know, with an idea. And we were, I guess, across the accounting firm as well as the new startup. And look, we're talking sort of 10 years ago now when few stocks came into the picture. So probably what I would do differently is have a bit more confidence and just go for it a bit more. You know, I think that there's pros and cons to this. We went in a very structured, slow, conservative way to make sure that we could address the pain points and did have clients, and, you know, we weren't putting on people before we could pay them. You know, we wanted to get to that point of profit before building a really, really big business. But if I look back, I was trying to juggle too many things. And you can't build a business and have the sales and the marketing resources and, you know, the awareness and attending events and pushing it if you're still trying to run an accounting practice. So I think it's just maybe throwing all in a little bit sooner would be one of the reflections. But again, pros and cons. You've also got to be, and we were very lucky, we had a great solid accounting firm that we had to fall back on. You know, we had the best of both worlds. So we could self-fund our pathway of Fuseworks. So going at it in a sort of a conservative way, did have some pros, but I look back and go, I could have been a little bit sooner. Took a few years to really go, yeah, we're all in here.
Melissa, just to kind of like tackle that a little bit further, I mean, we see from our perspective quite often, it's all about the balance. Some founders are not confident enough and don't push enough and don't go fast enough. Others quite often, they're overconfident and then they develop blind spots and they stop listening to users in the market and just think it's all about their vision. So from your experience, how do you find that balance of not being like having enough confidence but not crossing into overconfidence territory?
Yeah, that's a really good question. And something that I think we did strike a pretty good balance with that. I would just say you need to be really mindful about investing and putting people on to support growth. And again, we did that in a tailored way, in that we went, okay, well, we need more product team members. Okay, well, now we need more sales team members. But probably one of the regrets was, could we have done better sooner if we had more sales support? Probably. So it's a bit like chicken and egg. Like, when do you put people on? I don't think there's sort of no right or wrong to that. You just got to, I think, just back yourself a bit and invest in people to support that vision, because you can't be selling a product. You've got this great product, but you need, you know, people on the ground to actually communicate that and share the value of that. So marketing resources, sales resources, are really, really important. So I'm not sure if that answered your question, but it's we did, like I mentioned, we were very conservative in who we hired, and our first few hires were, implementation team, and then, we surrounded that by product, sales, marketing, support, and now it's things like ongoing client success, the addition of more support, the addition of more product. So just being really mindful of who is your next hire. We're having a planning day on Tuesday, and one of the questions we put to our entire team is, who is the next person on the bus with Fuseworks? Because that is a really big part of the success, the right person at the right time doing the right role.
And on that topic of kind of scaling up and growing a team, something that, I think you guys have done very well, but and to the points that you're making around you wish you'd kind of done it sooner. I'm interested in that because there's when people talk about scale, they talk about achieve product market fit and then know that if I spend a dollar here, I'm going to get $2 back. And at that point, of course, hire a salesperson, you know what you're going to get for them. Is that the point where you're saying, I wish we doubled down faster, we knew we were getting that return? Or was there still a level of uncertainty around those hires? And you is more, I wish we did it because in hindsight it worked out, but
Look, it's all hindsight, right? So at the time, would we have ever been courageous enough to just do it? Maybe not. I think it's, look, we've got a really solid product and we knew it had market fit and we knew we were ticking the boxes with the clients we were getting. So the evidence was there. It was just the courage to do it. When you're going into a startup, I'm very lucky to have a business partner to share the frustrations, just all of the things that it's like, oh, these moments of what are we doing? How are we doing this? What's tomorrow look like? Like, that's really, really crucial. If you don't have a business partner on the journey with you, who is that person for you? Because you include the team as much as you can. And we do have a culture of inclusiveness and we run open book management. So the entire team knows how we're doing, what profit we're making, what we're planning for, they're part of it. Like, that's how we've always operated our accounting business. So that's what we do. And that's another reason for the success. You're not just building a product, you're actually building a team and a community and I guess lifestyle for all the people that we've got working with us. So we want to create a team where people want to come and work for Fuseworks because they know we have fun rewards, we have great clients, we have great engagement, and it's not just about the profit at the end of the day, because a software business doesn't make profit straight away, right? It takes time. We're in it for the long-term play. So it's all of those little things that actually makes for a really great brand and business, and people like that. So anyway, I've gone off on tangents, but I'll pause.
I wasn't sure whether to go down this route, but I think it's a good point you've made around the team and wanting to have fun and there's more to life. Like there's a few other components here. And we see a lot of startups kind of early days having to make that decision between bootstrap and do it my own way or raise money. And the pressure is different in both situations. One is, can I even keep this alive? And the other is, I've got to do this for someone else and to make money and to hit these milestones. Have you guys raised money? I mean, obviously you had a firm alongside. So yeah, do you have any thoughts around that?
Yeah, and look, that was the reason for us going slowly and steadily, cautiously and well planned, is that we weren't being given millions from external investors. It was our own investment, our own money, to be very focused on where we put that money and what we invested in and what resources at the right time. So I think the whole, there is pros and cons of both. You could get money thrown at you and you use it in such a way. We've seen other businesses have done that and maybe they spend the money on the wrong things. We were very purposeful on this is our business. We know what success looks like. We know where we want to spend our money, what we need to be spending our money on, and we're accountable to ourselves to build the business. So I don't regret that at all. You just have to obviously be mindful that it does take a few years to and hard work. You're working around the clock because you don't have the team to support that. So look, there's pros and cons. I think we were very fortunate to be in a position where we did it ourselves. We've made it work ourselves, and we've grown then an amazing team around us that's going to help us now into the next phase. And we also think about, like, and this is when you, when you're in a startup phase of a product, we had a bit of a, I guess, a juncture about 4 years ago when we were contemplating another product. That's like you're building a startup all over again. Do we, don't we, why? So that's, I mean, that decision to bring the next product in, FewSign, was like, oh, why didn't we do that sooner? So, again, it's trying to take the opportunities of, I guess, you know, competition, what's out there, et cetera, et cetera, et cetera, into what should we be doing and how should we be doing it and when should we be doing it, and being really mindful of that. And looking back, obviously, with no regrets, but some of these things you're like, oh, I'm really glad we did that.
Lisa, just to cover a little bit around that, raising investment, you know, in particular from VCs, compared to bootstrapping. Now, this is something that might not age well, because really the current market sentiment can shift quite quickly, and maybe in 6 months, a year, this question is going to sound very different. But kind of like right now, the way the market is, like bootstrapping, building a profitable business, taking your time, having more control makes a lot of sense. 2 years ago, it would be like, you know, why would you do that when there's like money everywhere? And if you're not getting another round and an announcement in TechCrunch, you're basically failing. So how do you kind of like have a bit more of a long-term approach, putting aside the market sentiment, whether you should raise money or you should bootstrap according to what you want to achieve?
Yeah, I guess to look at that, you know, to the comment a couple of years ago, if you didn't, you're failing. I'm like, we're a success story. We didn't, and we have, and we've ridden the storm of all of that and come out the other side without having to do that. And that's pretty cool. Not accountable to anybody else, doing what we want to do and having involvement from our entire team on that direction. So I think it's also, if you want to do something like that, or if you need extra funds to do that, what does that look like? Why do you need those funds? Is it to pay for additional people? Or, you know, for us, it was about, well, it's not just another person. How do we automate? You know, how do we make a really well-oiled machine so we don't need to put money into all of that stuff? So I think it really comes down to what are you going to be using that for? Is it for expansion? Is it for hiring more people? Or can you look at that differently and do it like we did, with the ability to be really focused around what we're spending and when we're spending it?
Moving on to FewSign, which you touched on a little bit before, the second product that you launched, digital signing tool for accounting firms. How on earth did you think that you were going to compete with the likes of DocuSign, Adobe Sign? You know, I think anyone listening would think that it doesn't necessarily make sense to go after a market where there's very well-known players already there. But I suppose you would have a good answer for why you did.
Yeah, 100%. Similar to the way we embarked on Fuse Docs, we were in a very, I guess, fortunate position that there wasn't anything like it. And there still isn't, in terms of the automation around document collation and what it did. Because of our really loyal client base, you know, we've got probably a 99% retention rate of our clients. Because of that and our relationship and the focus on people, not just the product, so we're more like a service business with product. Because of that relationship, we knew the frustrations clients were having with existing platforms. We knew they were asking us, oh, come on, guys, can't you just do something with, you know, with digital signing, or can't you give us a way to do that? You've done Fuse Docs. Can't we just send our documents straight over for signing? So we did have quite a lot of market validation before we embarked on it. We went through lots of different, I guess, avenues to go, well, do we just sort of plug something else in, you know, underneath, you know, another umbrella, white label something? And then we did the research and realized, hey, we can actually do this ourselves better for our industry. And yes, we were up against some big names. Like, proof's in the pudding. Like, even though they're big names, we have got a rock solid product for accountants, because we know accountants, we know all the intricacies. We've built it with that very focused vision. But we knew a lot of the pitfalls of all of the things out there from our existing clients. So we had clients before we'd even built the product. And again, we're like, you know, we've well exceeded our expectation in the last 4 years of what that looks like. And we are still competing against the big players. But when they start noticing you, you know, you're onto something good, right? So market validation, again, building a product that your clients are asking for, trying to focus on the elements of a product that aren't working the way accountants want them to work, and creating a platform that fits, that really fits. So, yeah, no regrets at all. The only thing with FewSign is, why didn't we do that sooner? Like, we're just glad we took that leap of faith. And it was a big investment. But looking on, you know, the other end of that, yeah, hugely proud of what we've created there.
With respect to your most recent leap into the UK, which we've had the pleasure of doing some work with you on that, something I think that stands out from my memory is almost an assumption I think that I probably had myself when we kind of embarked on that project, was how different can digital signing be for accountants in Australia and New Zealand and the UK? Like, what are the odds that it's really going to be that different? How do you see that, looking back at, you know, the research, but also now having got boots on the ground, officially kind of made that impact and been to events and spoken to people there? How important are those nuances?
Yeah, that's a good question. And, you know, again, that's a decision around how do you grow, where do you grow? Do we grow geographical or do we grow across industries? And we made that decision. Although we have lots of clients from lots of different industries because it's a digital signing platform, it's built for accountants. And accountants are very similar, regardless of where they're located. So we're all still working for the relevant tax office. In those jurisdictions, we've all still got compliance documentation. We still have to have stuff signed off, and there's a lot of paperwork. And there's a lot of similarities in the way accountants work. At the end of the day, there's practice management system, there's a document management system, there's documents, there's workflows, there's accountants, there's admin. It's pretty much the same. We're just filling out slightly different forms. So for us, the transfer to other locations was quite straightforward. There is some little differences with software people are using or different practices are using, maybe some of the lingo, but at its core, the platform that we've created is very transferable, which is great. You don't often get that when you're a startup, and there is probably a handful that I can even think of now off the top of my head in Australia that go, oh, I'd love to go to the UK or New Zealand. Oh, we can't because that impact, like, we work, you know, alongside the tax office or company's office or this or that. So I think we were in that position where we could. And it's like, you know, DocuSign, Adobe, they're global because, again, you can be because of the nature of what we're doing. And as long as we meet the, you know, Electronic Transactions Act in the relevant countries, again, they're quite similar. We don't find too much of a variation with the change in product. And, you know, that was one of the reasons we embarked and engaged the Early Adopters Hub in the first place. What is the market? What does the market look like? And what does the product need? And is the product ready for it? And we worked out pretty quickly it was.
Melissa, just to push you and challenge you on that a little bit, because that's what I'm here for. Because it's just a mistake we see. I mean, we do work with mostly early stage startups, but we've got like you guys as well that, you know, we're looking to expand internationally. And we like kind of like to treat it as you're looking for product market fit in a new market. And that's kind of the best approach rather than being overconfident that you've got it and you just need to sell to people there. So, I mean, you said largely there was a lot of similarities, so that made the transition easier, and there are some important nuances. So potentially what was the initial go-to-market that you had in mind, and what was kind of like the impact on your go-to-market strategy following some of the research with the early users over there?
Yeah, so I guess the big thing when it comes to embarking on another region is firstly, I guess, doing your homework and working out what's a way that you can start getting that brand awareness and understanding at a deeper level. So no different to what we did here. Here, obviously, you know, distant memory, so it's all just, you know, peaches. But when you're looking at that, it is about understanding and immersing yourself in the community. So we did that through a stint in the UK earlier this year. We invested in a few different events to get some brand awareness out there, and we engaged with a lot of members of the community and current clients around what else, what more, where do we need to be, what do we need to be doing? And that's going to then pave the way for the next stage. So I think it's, again, like we've done in the past, very purposeful and cautious in terms of our approach and our rollout. We have some amazing clients in the UK. They're talking the talk. They're referring us to others. They're showing that there's huge opportunity there as well. So, again, it's about creating the community, being at the right places, marketing, you know, hanging out with the right people. No different to what we did here. It's just you're starting, again, in a different region. So it's about then having the courage to invest and focus on a new area. No different to when we were working with New Zealand clients for the first time. Slight differences, boots on the ground, and, you know, being able to walk the talk and understand what pain points they're going through. That's all really relevant. And that's, I guess, the next step for us.
Fantastic. And I think we're probably at that pointy end of the conversation where I have to ask the question that we ask everybody who joins us, which is, you know, what do you see as the biggest tar pit mistake that accounting tech startups need to avoid? Or maybe more broadly, I mean, if it's not accounting tech specific, that's fine. But yeah, do you have a classic tar pit mistake you see?
Don't wait for a product to be finished. A product is never finished. So if you've got an idea, the best thing you can do, get version one of that product into the hands of your clients and start getting feedback early. So you need market validation. You need feedback. You need to evolve the product. So you need to get it into their hands as quick as you possibly can. So don't call it a finished product. It's phase one. We did that with everything we've done, and it has been the best thing we could have ever done, because we knew what the next iterations of the product were going to be, what people were screaming out for. Great, that goes to the top of the list. What are the things they don't care about, how they use the product? So that would be the biggest thing. Just don't wait. A competitor will jump in ahead of you. You won't have the understanding of what the client's actually using the product for, or some of the extra features that you need to put in it. So just get it in their hands as early as you possibly can would be my suggestion.
And I know that in your case, you had the personal pain point. You'd validated that others had it as well. And I imagine it was after that that it's a matter of, let's move as quickly as we possibly can now to get that first version in their hands.
100%. And for Fuse Docs, that was the thing that, I guess, got us realizing pretty quickly that this had to turn from a little, you know, plug-in in Excel to a fully fledged product with scale. We did the same thing with FuseSign. So we knew our 10 beta clients before we'd even created it, you know. So that would be my biggest suggestion. And I do get this, you know, my husband says, oh, so are you done yet? I'm like, we're never done. Like, this is like, there is just, what else can we do? What else can we do? What are people asking for? What's the next iteration of the product? A product's not finished. So get it in the hands of the client as soon as you can would be my big suggestion.
Awesome. Thanks, Melissa. Appreciate your openness, honesty, and good luck with the journey from here.
Thank you.
Thank you once again for tuning in. We hope you enjoyed the episode. If you are a potential founder in your early stages of developing a product, or elsewhere in the journey struggling to achieve product market fit, we would love for you to reach out at www.earlyadoptershub.com. This has been another episode of the Accounting Tech Tar Pit, presented by Early Adopters Hub, the accelerator for accounting tech.